You're listening to the Surgeons of Horror podcast. The Halloween franchise. The Jamie Lloyd movies.
Welcome to the Surgeons of Horror podcast. Its purpose is to look into the horror films, dissecting them one screen legend and franchise at a time. Our podcast subject for this episode is dedicated to three of the Halloween franchise films: Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers; Halloween 5, Revenge of Michael Myers; and Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers. In order to successfully do this, we need a team of horror aficionados who will form this surgical team each episode. So let me introduce you. First up is yours truly, Paul Farrell. I'm the lead surgeon and host for this series of the podcast. Joining me each episode at the operating theatre of the Halloween franchise discussions is Chief Surgical Technician Ben Skinner.
Happy Halloween!
Woohoo! Yeah, we're recording this on Halloween itself, so it's likely that this will feature a few weeks down the track by the time podcasters get to listen to it. But for our purposes, it's Halloween, and we're dressed up, ready.
Yeah, I've got my finest... Yeah, I'm dressed up as myself right now. Yeah,
you are Ben Skinner. You're playing Ben Skinner.
We are actually recording this at our place of work, so...
We are.
It's I don't know if... They seem to be quite... There's a few people dressed up today.
There are. I've seen a few people dressed up. I mean...
But it seems like the Halloween craze hasn't quite made its way into the general workplace as of yet.
No.
It's acceptable to...
Not yet. Although it's creeping through, isn't it? It's creeping through. Like, the floor that we're on, there's just a whole... Like, in the kitchen's been turned into, like, a candy fest.
And I feel like that speaks to the greater Australian community. Like...
Yeah.
I feel like Halloween's been growing. People have been saying every year for like the last 10, 20 years, like, oh, you know, it's becoming a thing.
Halloween.
Slowly but surely. I'm sure there's little pockets of suburbia here and there that we'll be trick-or-treating tonight, but other places you wouldn't even know.
That's right. I mean, like, it's weird. Actually, like, I'm on the wrong side of the tracks where I'm in the Blue Mountains, because literally on one side of the tracks, they just go... Halloween crazy, and on the other there's just nothing's dead,
and you're just come on, guys,
I got candy. Please come and entertain me. Yeah, it's all good. So look, we're here, as I said, to just talk about 4, 5, and 6 of the Halloween franchise. I'm deliberately grouping these together. So if I just quickly give a bit of background on each one. Halloween 4 would be released 6 years after Season of the Witch and would be directed by Dwight H. Little. Among his credits would be Rapid Fire of Brandon Lee fame, Free Willy 2.
Ah, probably the best Free Willy.
Yeah. And I've got Murder at 1600 and Anaconda's The Hunt for the Blood Orchid.
Yes. So, did it get a cinema release?
I don't know if it did. Did it get one?
No, I feel like it did.
I might not have. I do remember watching it.
Didn't have J-Lo, though.
Didn't have J-Lo, yeah. Never going to work, is it? And the movie would see the return of our much-loved villain, Myers, who would find his old foe, Dr. Sam Loomis, and once more... I'm going to say that line again. Myers would find his old foe, Dr. Sam Loomis, once more, blocking his killing spree, and Jamie Lloyd, played by Danielle Harris, as his niece and intended victim. Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, would swiftly follow the following year in 1989, directed by, I'm going to try and pronounce this right, Dominique Ottenon-Girard, a director of the film and stage alike in his craft. Among his credits includes Omen 4, The Awakening. In this one, the story...
These guys really are the go-to...
Come on,
like,
sequels.
Shitty sequels.
Shitty sequels. Yeah, I wasn't going to say too much on that one. Or maybe we should. The story would pick up again with Jamie Lloyd and Dr. Sam Loomis as her protector, and would also introduce the mysterious man in black. Finally, in our discussions, is Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. And it would briefly feature Jamie Lloyd, but the protagonist would switch to a grown-up Tommy Doyle played by Paul Rudd.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Paul Rudd.
So did he change his name after that movie?
Maybe. Because of that movie?
I don't know. He just wanted to completely just separate himself from that.
Yeah, that's right. And for the last time, Donald Pleasance as Dr. Sam Loomis would come back. And the reveal of whom the man in black was. It may seem like a lot to get through in this podcast, but I do want to try and tackle these movies in unison by focusing on the key characters that are involved. So first up, let's take a look at Jamie Lloyd. She's the daughter of Laurie Strode, and Jamie Lee Curtis was actually offered the chance to return to part four, but she declined due to other commitments.
Other commitments in quotation marks.
Yeah. She suggested that her part be killed off in an automobile accident as a way of getting around things, which is in the script.
Automobile accident.
Oh, that! No. That old chestnut. Jamie Lloyd would be played in parts four and five by Danielle Harris, as I said earlier. It's never really revealed who her father is, but some fans have speculated that it could have been Jimmy from Halloween 2.
I just, you know what? I just can't picture her having a kid, like, after all the shit that's happened. Like,
Laurie Strode.
I feel like
even though it does happen again, like, when they kind of reinvent the wheel again by H2O, she's got a son by that point.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. Supposedly, she in order for that to be correct, I think she would have had to have had him 3 years after the events of...
So they fuck with the timeline, obviously.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Well, this isn't the series for that, if we're looking for continuity. Of,
Oh, no. Not at all. It goes... In fact, there's, like... I think there's three strains currently going. They've got, like, the original... So the original Halloween timeline, which was... Halloween 2, H2O and Resurrection.
Right.
Then there's the Jamie Lloyd kind of curse.
Four, five, six,
yeah. And then Rob Zombie. Rob Zombie.
Well, it's still not as fucked up as the X-Men timeline, so...
That's true.
Yeah.
So if we look at Jamie, she's raised by her foster parents and has a closer relationship with her older foster sister, Rachel Carruthers, played by Ellie Cornell. Halloween 4 would see Jamie pursued by her uncle Michael Myers at first through her nightmares and visions, and then in reality as he goes on a killing spree to reach her, more Myers in a bit down the track. There's an under siege moment when Jamie, Rachel and a handful of others hide out in the house awaiting Myers' return. Inevitably, he does so and the chase continues onto the roof where Rachel falls to the ground. All is well, though, and eventually the pursuit ends up in a pickup truck where Michael's offs a few people.
Good old-fashioned car chase.
Yeah, and then begins to attack Rachel, who is now driving said vehicle. Myers is thrown off the car and rammed down. Myers is eventually gunned down, but not before the suggestion of his spirit passing onto Jamie. The climax of four sees Jamie possessed by Michael and stabbing her stepmother with a pair of scissors, much to the shock of Rachel, Loomis and the sheriff, who stare on aghast at what may have become of the sweet innocent Jamie. Yeah. So, like, I just kind of obviously wrapped that up really, really quickly about Jamie just on part four.
Yeah.
So is there anything that stood out for her character for you in this period? So obviously, like, without Jamie Lee Curtis's commitment, they have to look at somewhere else. So they're going with a, well, let's keep the bloodline kind of thing going. And he's now trying to attack his niece.
Yeah, it makes sense that he would just continue going after family members.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, like, what makes him unique? Like, that's that.
Yes.
His singular purpose is to, you know...
Yeah.
To go after the bloodline. But...
That's right.
She... Yeah, as an anchor for the movie, I don't know whether she's quite... I mean, like... She doesn't really hold a flame at all to Curtis, but she's also a child actor as well.
Exactly, so. Yeah.
I think she's quite good in a lot of the scenes where she has to be traumatized. And,
yeah.
You know, it
does traumatize very well.
But yeah. I suppose I maybe they were just scaring the shit out of her on set.
It's interesting, hey, because like you see a lot of the behind the scenes images and stuff of this movie, and it looks like she's having a blast. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone smiles for cameras, but you know, it does kind of look like they're having fun. And she did say that she had fun on set too.
Yeah.
You know, when there's so many rules conventions. Involved
with using child actors anyway, so she barely would have
been on set. Yeah. That's it. So look, it looks. I really like her in this movie. I think she hits the notes perfectly as far as what they were trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And it is. There's enough there. Enough. Concern about her character in particular to warrant the audience to care about what actually happens to her and for her to survive. You know, her sister Rachel Carruthers, I guess, is your kind of anchor as far as a bit more of a grown-up kind of character who's there trying to support her and as Michaels goes on the chase. But yeah, I did like her. But more importantly, I really liked the ending to this movie.
Yeah, I actually think the ending stood out to me as well. Like I like that it just keeps building, and it's not just in the house. Like
no,
it takes it beyond that, and you know, it continues, you know, for a lot longer than what we're used to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And takes it to a new place. But I do think that. Yeah, I do think the whole time you're watching this film, you kind of, I don't really buy the fact that she is Laurie Strode's daughter. Like, they try to connect them, but it doesn't never really feels like it's a direct sequel to those films.
Like and I think that's why, as I said, there are these like three different strains, because they are of Halloween. You know, as I said, with the original. Franchise timeline, this kind of Jamie Lloyd character timeline and the Rob Zombie ones all contain like a very different feel to each other.
So
it is a strange one, isn't it? And it does sit separate from the others. I did enjoy this movie, though, and I do like the idea of this whole kind of, you know, what or who is Michael Myers. Is the evil spirit, you know, something that can be kind of passed on through the bloodline? You know, so does, you know, by the way they intone the ending is that Jamie Lloyd's character has picked up this, for want of a better word, like evil entity.
And
it's kind of interesting.
I liked where the ending went, but I don't necessarily buy it when she does that turn.
With a knife.
It's just so sudden, like,
yeah.
I don't think it was really hinted at enough. But like for her to just suddenly change, I don't think I like the idea as much of Michael being. Whenever the supernatural like comes in, I know, but obviously before now we've seen a lot more things happen that just he should have been dead long ago.
Obviously,
there's always something. Been a supernatural element to it.
That's right.
The fact that he's able to just like infect her with his soul or something, take over her body or
for sure
spark something. But it just did seem, when she does that evil turn, it did seem to come out of nowhere for me.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know whether more could have been done to
like, play up on gradual, that. Or like, I mean, especially like, I don't know, if there needed to be a scene between Myers' demise and her being transported back home.
Yeah.
And seeing her conflicted in some way. I don't know, but maybe that's what
I guess they were going for a big shock ending. So it was like... You know, they wanted an ending that people would talk about after leaving the cinema.
And they definitely got that. They definitely got that. So, look, let's look at where Jamie Lloyd's character goes from Halloween 5. So we kind of pick her up at Haddonfield's Children's Clinic. The results of the previous film installment has left her a bit mute. Not a bit. She is mute. Her nightmares have escalated and she now has seizures to boot. Once more, Danielle Harris plays the role of Jamie. This time, when Michael comes back from the dead... Jamie picks up his spirit and can see when he kills, and more convulsions occur when she does so, or when he does kill. The film concludes back at the Myers house, where her uncle, through its various nooks and crannies, she's trying to escape from him, including there is actually quite a great sequence where she's trying to climb up inside the laundry chute, pursued by Michael. I kind of like that sequence. All appeals well again when Loomis then helps to ensnare Michael, but when they are escorted back to the police station, she discovers dead officers all over the place, a bit Terminator style.
Definitely.
And then she starts to moan in terror at the carnage that lay before her.
No. That does not actually happen.
No. Almost. It could have.
If George Lucas remade this film, that's it.
So what do we make of her journey in Halloween 5, The Return of Michael Myers?
I actually thought that they would go and commit to the evil child thing.
Yeah.
They just didn't.
No.
And you know, from the little that I've read about the film, I think they were going to, but someone took issue with that. Like, they didn't agree with
evil kid.
Well, they didn't. They sort of, there's bits of it in there. Like, obviously she's still affected, but. If it had been like, you know, Michael and her teaming up, or you know, maybe
tag team.
Maybe they thought it was a bit too like like full on having a kid like go around killing people.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's where I thought that when 4 ended, I figured that's what that it would go.
Well, that seemed like the natural transgression for it, you know. But like, yeah, you know, but then Myers by this point is such a loved character.
Mm.
What do you do with him, you know, if he's got some kind of psychic killer kid?
And it couldn't pretty bad if you know, he started caring for her and, you know, taking her clothes shopping and like buying masks. Just
taking her driving lessons.
Yeah, that's as well, right. Like, all the big milestones.
Wherever he learned to drive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, what do you make of her being mute in this too? Like, that's been a bit of a contention as far as fans of the franchise are concerned.
She does talk eventually, doesn't she?
She does, but like, she is kind of subjected to just kind of running around and, you know, looking a bit panic stricken and not really having much to do outside of that.
Whether this is a real betrayal of, you know, where do you go after stabbing someone with a pair of scissors? Like, what effect would that have on you? And, you know, would they actually send you? Like, would she have been given electroshock therapy or? Like,
yeah. I guess
it's a coping mechanism.
Feels like they kind of missed the opportunity to do something interesting or a bit different with the franchise at this stage with her character. But, you know, that was their choice.
Yeah.
So look, by the time we get to Halloween 6, are you okay if I talk about move on to 6?
Or no, do you one thing I was gonna say is it's clear that they it almost feels like these were shot like back to back.
Yeah, well, like I said, this one was definitely the following year, so it's kind of a release, so it has got that.
And the way that they finish off in 4, it's almost like they knew they were coming back.
Yeah.
It's almost like, because this is the model for films now.
Yeah,
they always have, you know, you always got to set up a sequel in the last couple of minutes.
And that's it.
The fact that Michael is, you know, he collapses and it turns out he's been, like, looked after by this guy for, like, years or something.
Yeah, yeah.
In between the films.
That's right, between 5 and 6.
Are we led to believe that?
There is a bit of a, and it kind of, I guess it goes, and we're not talking about Myers strictly quite yet, but there is a bit of a Frankenstein kind of nod to this in the end of Frankenstein, James Whale's Frankenstein. You see him plummet down a mine shaft,
right
at the bottom of as the windmill catches fire.
I can see that now,
and then he's then supposedly kind of, you know, stumbles and finds his way against, you know, to I think it's a blind man that kind of helps him out. But yeah, so there is kind of like a bit of a nod to that. So I don't know what happens to him. You've got a thing about timelines, don't you? Because I know in our last discussion in Halloween 2, we were talking about how Michael Myers' movements and the believability between films.
It's interesting that they skipped a few. Was it a year or a couple of years?
Between 4 and 5 and 6.
Between 4 and 5.
Four and five is the following year.
Yeah.
So it's 1 year. So but then there's a bit of a gap between 5 and 6.
Yeah, but it's also like the fact that this was released like a year later.
Yeah.
It's almost like that current model of the Saw films and Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
you gotta get it out every year, like around Halloween.
People expect it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. I think we said in our, I can't even remember what discussions it was in a previous discussion about how there's a lack of that now, and are we going to be returning to that again?
Yeah, it has actually gone away.
I haven't seen it yet.
It was a Paranormal Activity that came out last year. But
right. Yeah, but they kind of flogged that one, haven't they?
Yeah.
I don't know if they can resurrect. Like, Saw's coming back next year.
Yeah, I heard that.
And and maybe, who knows, with there's been a lot of positive talk about Ouija 2, which was
gonna keep going.
Mike Flanagan has kind of resurrected, although apparently this was a prequel. Haven't seen it yet.
I guess by their nature, they're quite easy to churn out in that way.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Especially with the model that James Wan's taken on, like, those films are shot for a small budget in LA, minimal post work involved, so you can see how they're able to do that. But back then they would have been thinking, like, because it was obviously such a long period between 3 and 4.
That's right,
wanted to like strike the iron while it was hot.
Agreed.
Or
the machete while it was sharp. So let's look at 6 as far as Jamie Lloyd's character is concerned. By this time, her character's been subjected to more of a minor role. She gives birth to a boy in the night of October 30th, 1995, which is when the film was released. This time, we've got J.C. Brandy playing the role of Jamie Lloyd. Harris reportedly asked for a figure of $5,000 that Dimension Films refused to pay. Harris has also suggested that she wasn't happy with the script. So anyway, but as the character's concerned, Jamie Lloyd has been imprisoned by the man in black who we saw at the end of number 5. But manages to escape and sends out a cry for help via a radio station call line before hiding her baby from a pursuing Michael. In the theatrical release, Michael kills her fairly early on when she's pinned to a corn thresher and disemboweled, which is a pretty gruesome death scene.
It's a bad way to go.
In the producer's cut, though, which has only kind of started to see the light of day, she actually survives only to be like shot in the head a bit.
Survives being disemboweled.
No, she doesn't. They don't have that scene in it. Like right. It happens
because it is quite
later on.
You're actually quite surprised that they kill her.
Yeah, and I guess that was going to be my my introduction to my comment about that is like, what do we feel about that? Because we've supposedly invested two movies with this character, and to have her kind of killed off. Is that a bit too dismissive?
For me, sounds like a heartless thing to say, but I had no particular love for the character anyway.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
You know,
yeah.
She did die. It wasn't really... I'm just like, let's get back to Paul Rudd now.
When's he coming into it?
And what's with his like eyeshadow going on, man?
He loved it.
Look, we'll get to Paul Rudd.
We will get to Paul
Rudd.
But,
I think it was surprising when it did happen, but I think it's kind of a good thing killing off your main character in the first act.
That's true. That is true.
But how much longer does she stay around for? And
see, that's the thing. Like, I've only been reading about this, so I've never actually seen the producer's cut. So I need to get my hands on it. It's on Blu-ray, but the copy I have it was just a DVD. So I need to kind of look at it because there's been a lot of. I'm not a great lover of 6, I have to say. Like, I feel like it's quite weak. But
that's shocking. That's shocking.
I'm being polite in that too. But apparently the producer's cut gives it a bit more strength, and there's been a lot of fans of the Halloween franchise who really support that version of the film.
So it's less shitty. It's like the ultimate edition of Batman vs Superman. Like it's not gonna fix. It's not gonna fix all the issues with the film, but.
Yeah, you know, exactly. So look, and the last thing I'm going to say on Jamie Lloyd's character as well is like by the time we come to H2O, when Laurie Strode comes back, Jamie's journey is wiped from continuity.
Yeah.
Is that what? Yeah. With no mention of her in future installments. And I just wondered what your thoughts are on that. Like,
yeah,
they kind of just basically there's no reference to her at all. And we might touch on that in H2O when we talk about it, but. You know, because like originally in H2O, her character was mentioned, but they kind of cut. They decided to end up cutting out all references to her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how does that stand? Like, because like you, by doing that, you are kind of really saying that 4, 5, and 6 aren't part of that. And then doing so, you know, H2O really is saying no. This is following on from 2.
And 3 is just like that's just a whole other thing right there. That's on Imagine's Secret Service.
Happy Halloween.
But I think I don't know. Like it probably angered some fans. But did anyone really love the storyline that they had going on? Like the arc that they had going on here?
I know. It's interesting because we are looking at, like you said, like the whole supernatural element, really, particularly in 6.
Yeah.
You know, because they're playing with the notion of like Myers is basically a puppet being controlled by a load of doctors, essentially, that who have turned to this cult.
Yeah,
the Curse of Thorn cult.
I think with H2O, I think people were so glad just to have Jamie Lee Curtis back.
They wouldn't
care that this storyline was jettisoned.
And it does. I mean, I'm not gonna get you to answer this now, but something to think about by the time we finish our Halloween discussions. Is where, you know, there's supposed to be a new Halloween film coming out next year. They've hit a bit of a brick wall about where do they pick up, you know, where do they pick up the storyline from? Do they continue the Jamie Lee Curtis kind of period? Obviously, you know, spoilers, she's not around anymore.
He'd be getting pretty old now, Michael.
He would be.
I guess he's ageless.
He is ageless. Do they pick up on the whole 4, 5, and 6 storyline as far as the supernatural element and the whole Curse of Thorn storyline, or do they just pick up where Rob Zombie left off? in that installment. Do you know what I mean? So they've got a bit of a conundrum there.
Sounds like you would think that they would just go for the safest option, which is to just go right back to the start. And maybe it's funny because if they've already gone back to this with H2O, they went back to the initial films. You can't go back there again.
So or can you?
Well,
like, you know, did they do a Marvel with Spider-Man and just kind of just do it again?
That's probably the most likely scenario. I can't see them going back and revisiting this, the 4, 5, 6 arc.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, look, let's look at possibly the reason to watch 4, 5, and 6, and that's Dr. Sam Loomis, played by Donald Pleasance. You know, notably in this story arc across the three movies, his presence is noted in the sense that is he one note? Maybe he is one note, but like he plays that note really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you've got Jamie Lee Curtis and the Laurie Strode character out of the picture. Myers needs to have a nemesis to play off. And would see Donald Pleasance take on that role throughout this part of the series. Hearing of Michael's return, Loomis goes back to Haddonfield in part 4. There's a great scene at the petrol station where Loomis thinks he's illuminating? No. There's a great scene where at the petrol station, Loomis thinks he's hallucinating and seeing Myers at the time. He pleads with him not to go back to Haddonfield, and this results in Myers driving off in a tow truck. Loomis tries to shoot after him, but it's of no use as the petrol station becomes engulfed in flames. Kind of like that moment.
But it's a bit action movie.
Yeah, it was a bit.
There's like a slow motion dive.
There is.
I just had a brief, I wanted to see that Donald Pleasance like Death Wish movie.
How cool would that be? Yeah.
But the main thing with him, like before we like go into the rest of the films, is how the hell did he survive getting burnt alive in number 2.
Yeah, they kind of gloss over that in a big way, don't they?
Like he's got
scarring. Yeah. And but yeah, they didn't really get around that, did they?
I guess that's what happens when you write yourself into a bit of a corner. It kind of killed him in that last movie, but we have to bring him back.
And also, there's no one. They had no one else to continue that.
Yeah.
Like, no Laurie Strode.
Although, also, that film ended with a shot of Michael very much being burnt to a crisp.
That's true. That's right. And yeah, he's burnt.
Yeah.
So does that say something about Sam Loomis? Is he also of the supernatural?
I don't think anyone presumes that. But
No, I don't think so too.
He's just a survivor, man. Like,
he's a survivor!
He just does what... He's just a complete selfless dude.
Yeah, yeah.
He never cares about himself.
No.
Doesn't have a family.
No.
Just, That's it. It's an obsession, really, isn't it?
It is. It's like Van Helsing to Dracula kind of whole.
That's right. He needs Michael.
Yeah.
It's his purpose.
Okay, so then Loomis then tries to convince the police that Myers has returned. Loomis seeks to protect Jamie from her uncle and tries to do so at her house. But when he leaves to go in search of Myers, that's when Myers attacks said house. Loomis then takes Jamie to the schoolhouse, only to be confronted by Michael and then thrown out of a window. Once more, he survives the confrontation, though. And the climax of H4 is still quite a strong one when Loomis sees that the evil which consumed Myers now seemingly inhabits Jamie, as we mentioned. He's confronted by his worst fears and sobs in the corner, an uncontrollable wreck of a man. Kind of noted here that it was quite a great performance by Pleasance, one moment.
Is it because he blames himself? Like, he feels terrible because he could have done more to prevent this from happening?
I think so. There's a few things playing on there, isn't there? There's the whole kind of failure of not protecting Jamie, the whole thinking that you finally vanquished evil only to...
Yeah.
Have it kind of stare you in the face, and once again, it's like history repeating with the...
Yeah, how much more fucking disappointment can this guy take? Yeah. You're a broken shell of a man.
Broken shell of a man. But it wasn't enough to deter him from coming back for H5.
No.
Loomis, at this point, he pressures Jamie to lure Michael out. It comes a bit of a dick in this one, doesn't he? Because he does kind of use her as bait a heck of a lot more. He learns obviously that Jamie is telepathically linked, to Michael, and this becomes his new obsession. He essentially uses her as bait, as I said, at the old Myers house. The police disband, leaving Loomis alone with Jamie to confront Myers, which he says, "Now you'll come, won't you, Michael?" Loomis tries to reason with Michael, but it fails, and Michael slashes Loomis across his abdomen. Loomis, though, still survives. He awakens in time to rescue Jamie by casting a net over Myers and then bludgeoning him with a wooden plank.
It's not exactly the most inventive way to take down your villain, is it?
Keep beating him.
Back to basics.
What do we think of Loomis's role in 5 here? As you know,
he's just given up, hasn't he? He just doesn't care anymore. He's just
The last time we see him really in 5 is him, you know, really laying out Myers in a. Is that if that's all it needed to defeat Myers?
A 4v2. Just
yeah, that's it.
Just the first 5 minutes, you know, someone clonks him over the back of the head.
Take that, you bastard.
Credits
roll. Yeah. Interestingly though, Pleasance does return again for Curse of Michael Myers in the 6th installment. It's revealed now. I quite like this journey of Loomis in this one. I like what they did with him, you know, because it's revealed that Loomis has now retired. It becomes something
of a.
Says
it to camera.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
He turns, he's like, retired, actually.
It's quite funny, isn't it? He's so having fun at this point. And this would actually be his last ever film credit as well, which is a sad way to see
it. I was wondering, I figured he completed the film and then long after. But yeah, he does look quite frail.
Like, he does look frail.
The first time he looks like, you know, suddenly he does. He looks quite old.
Yeah. And he's become something of not Pleasance, but Loomis has become something of a recluse by this point too. They mention him having suffered a heart attack after his last encounter with Myers, with the rage of the 2x4. He's called into action once again though when he hears Jamie's cries over the radio. At which point, then Loomis then learns that Jamie has given birth to a baby boy, and the bloodline has continued. He also learns that of a cult. There's been practiced beneath the mental sanitarium of Smith's Grove by his former colleague. And Loomis helps our protagonist, Tommy, Kara, and the baby escape from the hospital at the end of the movie. He heads back inside to deal with unfinished business. The fate of both him and Myers is unknown at the climax of the film, as we see Myers' mask on the floor and screaming coming from somewhere in the background. Your sound effects are awesome.
I think that was spot on.
That was spot on.
We heard. But then there's that weird, and they end on the pumpkin shot.
Does end on the pumpkin shot again.
So I'm like, that was the thing I was, you know, the whole film is like, because they all have, and we've been talking about the inclusion of the pumpkin in the opening.
Yes,
credits.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't a single pumpkin.
No.
Until the end of the
At the end of 6.
Of the film.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what they were, because he just cuts to like, you know, close-up pumpkin, candle goes out, cut to black.
It's they slightly knew.
It was quite a rushed. I thought it was quite a weird, like a weird ending. Like I know what they were trying to do, keep it up.
Did you feel like this was
added
in the probably
added later on,
in the politest possible way? The whole movie felt a bit rushed and incredibly disjointed.
Yeah.
Like, so I wonder, like, having, like, we're obviously speaking of this without seeing the producer's cut, whether that is why fans of the franchise prefer that one, because it does start to make more sense, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But there are elements of it that just felt like I was being really thrown out of the movie, and just found it really kind
stuff
of alienating
dad,
at
like,
times. And how crap was he?
The wife, and
Like that, I just found that really.
He gets his comeuppance.
He does, like, and I'm glad he did, because he was. I just found him really, I just found him really, really. He was a shit actor. Let's face it, he wasn't good. So it just
doesn't. Sorry, whoever that guy was. But yeah, the ending in particular with Loomis, like with Loomis, this is the end of that character's, you know, arc.
That's right.
And we're like, you know, are we happy with the way that he goes out? It's like, you know. That's why I feel like they added it later on, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, they cut to the shot, Michael's gone, and then let's get some shitty, like, sound effects of someone that doesn't sound like Donald Pleasance in the background.
Is this on par with your scathing review of Liam Neeson in The Grey, where you see him about to take on the wolf.
I wanted Donald Pleasance to fight a bunch of wolves.
Yeah.
You know, a final standoff, you know, would have been...
Is that what it's missing? Because, like, you know, we have Tommy basically is the one that sizes up to him at the end.
Yeah, maybe. But, is it out of the fact that Donald Pleasance couldn't do as much of that probably, physical stuff?
Yeah, I reckon.
So they've just done that as a way of...
Must have done, yeah. Yeah. Look, and when you look back at the, you know, it's weird, isn't it? When you look back at the Halloween franchise, it became so synonymous with Donald Pleasance and his role of Sam Loomis.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to picture him not in a Halloween franchise film.
Yeah.
Although they did do that in future films. but yeah, I don't know. It just kind of, I really enjoyed his performance. I really liked him in this too. I thought he conveyed it not so much as in 5. I found
it's like his swan song kind of thing.
He does,
like you can see that he's, yeah, the guy's seen some shit, but he's like, it's almost like
this guy's seen some retired. Shit.
I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah, that's it.
So he doesn't quite care enough. But
no, he just doesn't care anymore.
He just doesn't get...
The other thing, like, I'm not sure if I touch on this in the notes later on, but also the whole Curse of Thorn tattoo thing that... So, like, you know, where it kind of disappears from the Man in Black and then suddenly appears on Loomis.
Yeah.
Like, what do you make of that?
I was hoping you could enlighten me.
I just found that really... I don't know, from my point of view, that was really weird. Weird moment. Like, it really, like, that's, I guess, was the... Yes, we've kind of been dabbling with the whole supernatural thing, but this whole kind of passing on the torch of, you know, the Curse of Thorn kind of...
Are we going to talk about this, the Man in Black?
Yeah, we will, yeah.
Because, yeah, he's...
Before we get to him, let's just park that and talk about Tommy Doyle.
Yeah.
Because I know you want to talk about... I know you want to talk about Paul Rudd.
We just do a Paul Rudd podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Look, this is his first film. It's introducing him. You know, but what's interesting in here is like, so we don't have the Jamie Lloyd character has been kind of snuffed out. Where else can you go? What other characters can you try and resurrect from this past? Tommy Doyle, of course, he's grown up now.
Yeah.
You know, the kid that Laurie Strode looked after.
It's almost like they need to stop the movie and get someone to come in and explain. No, remember this kid from the first one? Yeah. Like,
you know. Anyway, So the writers and producers obviously bring back the character of Tommy Doyle. After surviving the ordeal of the Myers attack, we find him all grown up and looking very much like Paul Rudd in this movie.
Finally, Paul Rudd has aged at all since this film.
He hasn't aged at all since this film.
Yeah.
Put a like-by-like image of him in this next to, I don't know, Ant-Man.
Yeah.
And you see that, there is no difference.
Much like Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
They drink the blood of... young children.
I don't want to go there. Okay. Technically, we've seen his character before, though, in Halloween 4 at the convenience store, hanging out with the Brady character. But blink and you miss him. And he wasn't Paul Rudd, so that's probably why we didn't. In the 6th installment, though, he does return proper. And he's become, like Loomis, has become a bit of a recluse, which is perhaps why he gets on well with Loomis.
He's a bloody pervert.
He just stares at people from across the street.
Re-windowing up the place.
It's like steamy windows. there are heavy hints that he's unhinged in his obsession with Myers over the years. When he discovers Jamie's baby, he vows to protect him, and in doing so, discovers the cult and the Curse of Thorn. He eventually overpowers Myers somewhat unbelievably, I put here, by injecting him with some stuff and beating him with a pipe.
He really enjoys that beating as well.
He does.
It's actually quite gif-able, that moment where it's like, you know, he hits him and then he's like, no, I'm going to go him again. And just like, he thinks he's a big tough guy. You're just waiting for Myers to get up and tear him a new one.
Yeah, but he doesn't.
Thankfully he doesn't.
He doesn't.
Couldn't have been able to take seeing Paul Rudd die.
If it wasn't for that pipe.
Yeah. Which, the weight of that pipe, it's obviously not very heavy the way he's carrying it.
He escapes with the baby and Laurie's cousin, Kara, and safety at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
There is this one... Okay, I want to ask you about believability of his performance, right?
Yeah.
There is one scene where he's in a corridor and Akaru is locked inside a hospital room and he's trying to open it and he can't get it the door open whilst Myers is coming towards him. His performance in that lends weight to why he's a good comedy performer in later films.
Yeah.
Because that's all I could see. Like, it just wasn't believable. He just... No.
But none of it, like, I feel like he's trolling this entire film.
Yeah, yeah.
He was trying to be funny.
It did. It no comes else, across as funny.
Yeah.
A lot of it does.
I don't know whether that's because we know how funny Paul Rudd is now, or because it was just, you know. But he, like, I'd love to know what he thinks about this film.
That's exactly what I was about to say,
he
yeah.
He loves shitty movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time he goes on Conan, he shows a scene from, like, an old shitty kids film. So, like, I feel like he would embrace this.
I think he would, too.
And, yeah, he just feels miscast, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, like, all due respect to him, I don't know whether it's, are we looking at it with rose-tinted glasses, though?
Maybe.
You know, is it that? Because, like, it was just so hard to watch him in that role.
Yeah, as I said, he's got some weird, like, eyeshadow thing. I guess it was the mid-90s.
What's the mid-90s, man?
He's probably into his grunge. In fact, there's like a grunge song that plays over the end credits.
There is.
It's pretty obvious that we were now well into the 90s with this film.
Yeah.
Than other Halloween films. Because the soundtrack
it's all been they've replaced forgotten.
Like the piano with like a guitar. And it's just very... it sounds like a TV score.
Yeah, it does in a big way. Yeah, big way. Yeah, it's kind of a bit. Yeah, so look, that's Tommy Doyle. Is there anything else you want to add to him?
Oh, look, it's probably not going to be in my top 10 Paul Rudd performances.
But come on.
But
I ask you to reconsider.
If you're going to be a completist, then
Yeah, for sure. All right, look, so we were talking about the Man in Black, a.k.a. Dr. Terrence Wynn. He's another character to be resurrected from the past. Featured briefly in the first movie, Halloween, when he's talking to Loomis about Myers' escape. Later revelations allude to the fact that it was perhaps him who taught Myers to drive. He's basically the administrator of Smith's Grove Sanitarium, and he would appear again in Halloween 5, although his identity at this point isn't known, as the mysterious Man in Black. At the time of writing Halloween 5, the writers themselves were unaware of or unsure of who the identity of the Man in Black was.
Because it kind of just shows, that's what I mean, like, it's very, like, that's kind of what they do in movies now. They introduce that last scene, they kind of bring in the Man in Black.
Yeah.
It's like, who is this guy? And it's like, I guess they have a plan.
Yeah, that's right. Of course they do.
They have no fucking idea.
No idea. But essentially, like, he becomes the secondary antagonist in Halloween 6 when he arrives, even unwittingly at the end of... when he arrives at the climax of the movie and essentially kills 6 police officers in a bid to free Myers and kidnap Jamie. His killing spree somewhat overshadows Myers' killings in the climax of that movie too, I felt. Yeah. Because he kind of just very easily just comes in and wipes people out.
So we believe that he trained Michael in, like, the ways of...
Thorn.
Yeah, well, like he's the real puppet master behind.
Apparently, that's the purpose of it. Yeah, so like by the time by the time Curse hits our screens, it's revealed that Dr. Terrence Wynn is the head of a cult, and they are using Myers as a puppet to kill his family,
right?
In a way of blood sacrifice,
which on paper at least they're trying to do something new with the series. Like,
yeah,
you've got another villain, but I don't think they really do much with it. Like, he's not particularly memorable. The actor that plays him isn't particularly memorable.
And he's not really very villainous either.
No, he's like, not. Once his true identity is revealed, you're just like, oh, shit. Well, now you've just shown all your cards.
Yeah, that's right. And no longer. Would have been, I mean, maybe it would have been more interesting to have it as a... walk along the whole kind of spectre kind of idea, as in, like, you don't know who's behind it. And they reveal...
Yeah.
Obviously, Blofeld's the one by the time you get round to
that
reveal. That kind of thing may have worked, and maybe that's what they were going for, because even the ending's left a bit unsure of what's going on there. It's been revealed that he's also been secretly using Myers' DNA to bottle the evil. and believes he may have successfully done so in Jamie's baby.
Evil. A new fragrance.
Odor. Odor Myers. It's probably important to note that there are two versions of the movie, as I said, in existence, with the theatrical cut, which is what our podcast is basing its findings. Upon where we see, Wynn's demise at the hands of Myers in an operating room. In the now infamous and much sought-after producer's cut, which we here in Australia haven't had the chance to lay our hands on, goddammit, there is a heavier scrutiny placed on the cult element. Jamie's baby is to be used as a blood sacrifice, but Tommy stops the ritual and paralyzes Michael with ruin stones in that version. Wynn is left dying again at the hands of Myers, but manages to utter the words, "It's your game now," to Dr. Loomis before succumbing to death and passing on the mantle of leader of the Thorn cult.
That's
in the form of the tattoo.
Quite an email signature that you must have.
Yeah. It's your game now.
One of the classic lines.
So, what I mean, it's really hard to not avoid talking around the whole kind of cult element and Dr. Wynn's role within this. Like, but how do you feel about that whole
care about cult
injection of
cult storyline? Like, they even set it up. Paul Rudd gets the voiceover at the start, right?
So yeah, that's right.
Introducing it all. Yeah. And even then, I didn't care. So it's just.
It's funny, isn't it? Like, it
takes it to a place I didn't think the series would go.
And probably won't go back to again.
No, I just don't. I think anything that takes away from Michael too much takes away from the mystique.
It does a bit, Michael. Because it kind of gives you... You're taking away the whole element of who... Or the mystery of who Myers is by doing that. If you kind of reveal, like, you know, there's this stuff that controls him and it's not him that's doing it
all. Any time you make the horror... You make the villain just appear to be like a puppet. It's kind of like I was a bit at the end of Dark Knight Rises. I was a bit disappointed when there was a revelation that Bane was simply just like, you know, someone else's
tool.
But and then from that point on, I didn't fear him as much.
Right? No,
I didn't think he was as commanding.
No, that's right.
But it's the same kind of thing here, I guess. He's not necessarily sidelined in the film. Like, it's not to that extent.
No, it's not. No, you're right. But it just makes you look at Myers in a whole new light.
And by the time we come around to this, like, we're probably going to talk Myers.
You want to wait? Well, let's talk about Michael Myers. Nice segue. So look,
a bit of a clunky segue.
Yeah, that's right. We'll work it. Looking back on the franchise, maybe let's look at what impact that Myers has on the franchise through 4, 5, and 6. In 4, his body count is an impressive 17 out of 18 people killed in the movie. This is his highest in the franchise at this point.
Yeah.
His first on-screen kill is by driving his thumbs through an attendant's forehead.
I like that one.
That's kind of a cool one. We have 3 off-screen kills then before impaling a mechanic with a metal rod, which follows this. His next on-screen kill will be when he throws a character named Bucky into a metal transformer.
Yep. Didn't really look like he was going to fry to death, though.
No.
There's just a key grip, like, off to the side, flicking a light.
That's it, exactly. We then have 4 off-screen kills of police officers, which follow this, before he then pins Kelly Meeker to the wall with a shotgun. And then snaps Brady's neck.
I would say out of all the types of killing that the shape's known for, I think his favourite's probably impaling, don't you think?
He does like to impale. Even knives.
He likes hanging impaling. People like pictures.
Like pictures, he does.
Yeah.
Does. True.
In 6, there's even a repeat of the head tilt.
Yeah. When he's gazing on the... Yeah, which no, it's like kind of nice.
If there's a Michael Myers action figure, the head tilt, the pose, you hit a button.
His head. Yeah, that's right. If it hasn't been made, it should be. The just quickly, like his final 4 kills in the movie are 4 redneck vigilantes in the back of the moving truck.
So
before we go into 5 and 6, so what do we, I might re-edit this, but, you know, we did mention also just on the whole kind of, you know, hanging bodies on walls thing. you know, it is almost sometimes like he's creating art when he does it in his form, which I've always kind of liked about Myers' character.
Yeah, well, I think we've always said that, yeah. It's a nice touch.
So what do we think about his movement through four, though? That's a big bloodbath of killings, as I said, up in the ante. Probably there's kind of some kind of nice standout ones, as you mentioned, the first the first one, the Kelly Meeker killing as well. Pinging a, you know, with a shotgun was kind of cool. But then to kind of round it off with, like, just killing a bunch of rednecks on the back of a car as it's moving isn't as good.
No, that's so, that's more like action movie deaths. Yeah. You know?
We like it when he kind of sneaks up.
Getting tossed off the truck in Raiders.
Yeah, man.
But, I think we haven't yet got to the point where the deaths are just ridiculously... The death count's just ridiculously high.
No.
But...
I mean, it's high, but, like, you know, they all... They all kind of make sense, though, in four, don't you think?
Yeah, they do.
They're not outlandish by this point. They're not.
Yeah.
It's not ridiculous.
Even though the rednecks are a little bit outlandish, but
yeah.
Waving their pitchforks around.
So, like, when we get to Halloween 5, though, his murder spree drops to 12 victims in this one. So not as high. His first on-screen kill is of a character simply described as Mountain Man, but it would be his next kill. Which would probably be the most controversial, killing off much-loved character Rachel Carruthers with a pair of scissors into the chest. So Rachel, obviously, you know, one of the survivors of four. And people did actually quite like her character too. Some great kills follow this, though, with you know, with Mike being stabbed in the face with a garden claw. We have Spitz being impaled with a garden fork, and then Samantha's stomach being... sliced open with a scythe. So there's this kind of nice little moments in the next few scenes. Then we get a couple of off-screen kills next when it's revealed that Myers has stabbed two deputy officers with a pitchfork before then killing Tina Williams with a butcher knife. Old faithful.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that one, can you?
Nah.
Have they ever put, like, product placement for knives into films? Like if Scanpan got in...
They could they? Yeah. Like,
well, probably not. If you're gonna kill, kill well.
Yeah,
like, you know.
That's true. Look, so Myers kills Deputy Eddie Gray by smashing his face into a steering wheel, and his last on-screen kill is of Deputy Charlie Block when he hangs him with a rope from a second-floor window. His last two kills of the movie of Halloween 5 is they happen off-screen. And are unknown modes of death to a doctor and a nurse. So how do we feel about Myers' killing rampage in 5?
I don't think they're as inventive.
No.
A little less inventive. Apart from, the first, as you said, the second kill.
Second kill was a bit, it was more of a shock though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Moment, rather than being inventive, like pair of scissors as well.
Yeah.
It's nothing new there. I kind of like the middle chunk though, you know, where he goes a bit crazy in the barn. Killing a load of people with various farming instruments.
Yeah. He does. That's the thing. Like, it must be hard that must be actually like a brainstorm they have.
When
they've got the script and it's just like, it's like how you want how, like they've got a dial in the middle of the room they spin. It's just like it's like a Cluedo kind of thing.
That's
like
right.
Colonel Mustard in the barn with the rake.
That'd be kind of cool. So look, he you're right. That's what people pay to go and see, like particularly with you know, franchises. They want to see the deaths and they want to see.
They want those moments where oh damn,
damn.
That's the kind of moments you're going for.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the squint through your fingers, kind of.
The Glenn Walking Dead baseball bat.
Yes. Spoiler. Moments.
What? What? Come on.
It's definitely a thing with me. But that's probably like a side note.
Yeah.
Like eyes in general. Oh. Like I can't stand that. Like
things with eyes.
The Evil Dead remake.
Where
I get very squeamish.
Yeah.
Involving an eyeball being sliced.
Well, it's like one of the earliest horror films was short films was Un Chien d'Andalou, which is literally just a shot of an eyeball being sliced open. And it's like,
even just talking about it.
Yeah.
Oh, but anyway. that very much would push up a rating, I think.
Like, yeah, yeah.
For some reason,
oh, yeah.
Senses,
I think so.
Senses would have like a thing saying.
Eyeballs sliced.
Eyeballs sliced.
Or squished.
So do you think it gets? Do you think so? These would be solid R rated.
Yeah.
Films, right.
Yeah.
Or MA. MA or R.
I think they would probably are at this time.
Yeah.
Like, but it's weird, isn't it? Because we become softened as a society with film culture, you look back at some of these and they probably should be more MA rather than R.
Yeah, I feel like they soften it to a degree. Like, they go harder on the blood in later Halloween films.
Yeah.
But they still do a lot of cutaways compared to what we've seen now with torture porn stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
They often do cut away before the moment of, you know, so you don't get to see it.
But that's like, I mean, that's very, you know, it's the element of what you don't see and what the imagination fills in the gaps of, which is part of the beauty of filmmaking, I think. If you kind of get audiences going away thinking they've seen something when they actually haven't, that's clever.
But in the case of The Walking Dead, it's like clearly that they made a decision not to cut away
no.
a lot of those moments.
No, exactly. No, keep going.
Arguably, it doesn't always work.
No,
but
correct. So look, by the time Curse comes around, Myers' death tally is taken back up to 17, equaling his kill achievements to the fourth installment.
Yes.
His first on-screen kill is of a character named Mary, and he impales her head on a spike. Nice. He then snaps the head of a motorist before killing off Jamie Lloyd, ripping her body apart with tractor harrows. He then kills Deborah Strode with an axe into the chest, and then gloriously kills John Strode by stabbing him in the chest with a butcher knife and then electrocuting him. So that's the father figure that we grew to hate.
And then his head explodes. So how does electrocution cause that head to explode?
By putting dynamite into the mouth and setting fire to it.
Ah.
Didn't even see that bit.
That sounds like a very Looney Tunes.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. It's... the suspension of disbelief is all but out of the window by this point, I think. He then guts Barry Sims with a butcher's knife before slitting the throat of Tim Strode, and Beth is repeatedly stabbed with said instrument. In a
you don't actually see much of that. It's all
you don't.
Through binoculars. And,
that's right.
Or I think the camera mounted in Tommy's bedroom. But yeah, you see, it's weird the way that death. It's done in
it
like
is weird,
a weird faux slow-mo effect. And
yeah.
I don't know if they were trying to get the rating down or something. Or just...
Do we have much care factor for these characters at this point, though? Like Tim Strode and Beth? Like,
no.
You're not really like...
No, but I mean, they're both...
They both had sex.
They
deserve
to die.
Yeah, they deserve to die. That's it. So, like, when we reach the hospital, Myers then guts a patient before kills in succession or... the various kills in succession of Dr. Terence Wynn and his team by hacking them up with a machete. Nice. His last kill is when he crushes a doctor's head against some metal bars.
Yes, that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Although they cut away. You didn't get to see it in all its glory.
No.
I wanted to know how they would do that practical effect.
Keep pushing.
Yeah.
The head
it's like
through the bars.
It's like, you know, when the T-1000 walks through the bars.
Yes.
In
yeah.
2. But with like a
without
much gorier
success.
Version of that.
Like I just thought of an offline for so is it any good.com.
Yeah.
With your latest article about great death scenes.
Yes.
I forgot to mention
none
about
of these were in there.
None of these are in there, no. It says a lot. But I forgot to mention about the opening to Cube.
Yes. Chocolate slicing.
Oh, I love that. That was such a... I mean, it's been done to death since then, but when we first watched that movie,
Resident
it was
Evil.
Such a...
Resident
awesome...
Evil as well.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think... But
anyway.
I think that you could do a decent top 100 on
death.
Movie deaths.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm pretty sure, like, some sites have done it already, but it's kind of like, once you get past 50, it doesn't matter what order they're
no,
in.
No, that's true.
But
that's true.
It's also important that you kind of work out how... Like, what are you going for? Are you going for the ones that are simply just as gory as possible? Because there's actually, you know, like, dozens of them in the Saw franchise.
Oh, hell
but
yeah.
But I don't think that's... You shouldn't be rewarding them purely based on that. Like,
no,
there's, lot,
there's just... There needs to be...
Off.
Yeah, exactly. There needs to be inventiveness in there.
Yeah,
there needs
sure.
to be actual scare factor thrown in. Or shock factor, I should say, not scare factor. Because you can have the gore, but it doesn't necessarily shock.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else would be in there, like infamous kills. I don't know, like
right.
kills that still resonate today?
Some might have lost their power. Because I did make, obviously, my countdown's kind of a mixture of all different kinds of kills. But if you were going to base it purely off like the ones that still unsettle, there wouldn't be many that older films that still actually have the same
kind of, that's right,
like impact. But I think a lot of the, like, obviously there's moments in the first Halloween that still rank up there highly.
Yeah.
If you go back and look at them now. But there are those moments like that you still make you quite squeamish, and Cube definitely is one of those. Definitely is one of those.
I just remember that. I mean, what's that film, almost 20 years old now, isn't it, Cube, I think?
Yeah,
crazy. It's like mid 90s, I think, when that came out. So look, which is about the same time that can't be right.
The grunge track over the end.
So look, what do we think of Myers' journey through 4, 5, and 6? I mean, yes, we learn about the whole kind of puppet kind of factor in this. His kill counts. Is he still?
I think he's lost a bit of something along the way. I don't know. It's probably like sort of somewhere between 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Somewhere during 5, maybe.
Mm.
He doesn't have that same. He's just a relentless killing machine, which he always has been, but he doesn't move in the shadows as much.
Like, no.
There's too many shots in 6, especially, of him well lit, perfectly lit, like not hidden.
Spotlight on him.
Yeah, and it's like
tap dance routine.
Yeah, it's just, you know, why don't you just take him?
He had it coming. We're going to try and crowbar every podcast.
I'm waiting for that Chicago Halloween crossover.
Yeah, it's coming soon. Come on. Maybe that's where they should go next.
The musical, I honestly think I guess Phantom of the Opera's like that. But the...
Yeah, true.
Yeah, he's not... You don't fear him at all anymore, like, I think, by 6.
That's right. It's interesting, isn't it? Like, you just... That fear factor's completely gone.
Partially that's because they demystify him a bit.
Yeah.
The whole cult storyline.
Yeah, but just, I think that's right.
They shoot this as well. It's shot like, you know... like I said, like an episode of TV.
Yeah.
It's kind of that every time that there's a chance for there to be any kind of suspense, they'll cut away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then they'll just play it once again. They fall for the trap of, if you're playing the Halloween music, and there's a killing scene going on, it must be scary.
Yeah, yeah.
Which we know is not the case.
It'd be great to see some Halloween in the hands of someone like Mike Flanagan.
Yeah.
You know, who he did Hush fairly recently, of, you know, set that up as a, you know, house invasion horror, essentially. But having something like that, but playing with someone as iconic as Myers, would be quite an interesting kind of thing to see.
That's where you'd have to go with it.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like, you know, you look at It Follows, and then good idea, but really. That is Myers. That's why we always loved him.
Yeah, yeah.
Slowly but surely, like he'll track you down slowly. Yeah. He's walking towards the house very slowly. You're trying to get the door open. He's not speeding up at all.
No.
He could totally kill you if he wanted to. But that's the menace of him. And It Follows. You think to yourself, wait. So these things move like at a snail pace. How is that scary? It's like, well, you know, if they're chasing you for long enough and they're relentless enough,
it's weigh you down. Scary. Yeah.
But,
and that's the thing, like, you know, they have likened Myers to a shark, which we've mentioned before, the whole Jaws analogy.
Definitely.
And Jason as well. Like, they're all very similar. Like, it's a lot scarier when they, and especially when they are almost playing with you, you know, or their victims.
They lose that along the way in this series.
Yeah, yeah.
So this series was in need of a bit of a resurrection, if you will.
Unfortunately, when they did resurrection.
Yeah, woo! That's right.
Anyway, so look, let's try and kind of gather our final thoughts on this. So, like, of the movies and their place in there in the franchise as a whole, where would you place 4, 5, and 6 from the ones just leading up to what we've discussed so far? So Halloween 2.
Yeah.
Season of the Witch, 4, 5, 6.
I'd say 4 is probably after, like, obviously Halloween 1 and 2 are, like, the top, and then maybe 4.
Yeah.
And then I think 3, 5, and 6 are probably all down in, like, a bottom line somewhere.
Yeah.
But quite further down.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a big
gap between them, isn't there?
There's actually, like, a lot of people out there that say 3 is actually, like, they quite like 3. But Those people are full of shit.
He's thrown it down. The gauntlet's done. It's an interesting one, isn't it? I don't know whether they're trying to give it praise, like three more praise. Maybe it's because it was so bagged out. I think we said this in our three podcasts of how. Look, it's not a great movie, but it definitely wasn't as shit as it deserved to have been panned at the time. Just shouldn't have been part of the Halloween franchise.
Yeah.
Full stop. It should have been on its own right. Even then, though, you question whether it would still be a movie people would revisit today without the Halloween attachment to it.
Yeah.
I think I agree with you. I think two followed. It did just follow the story on nicely of the night's proceedings.
Yeah, it's that. Two is the only one that feels like it's from the same.
Yeah.
I mean, part of that's because Jamie Lee Curtis, but it still feels connected to the original.
Yeah, that's right.
But the other ones sort of feel separate to it.
Yeah.
They never feel like, you know, they're part of the same.
No, that's right. And I think I do agree. I did like four. I have to admit, I liked four's journey arc. And if you haven't got Laurie Strode anymore, where do you go with it? And I kind of like the idea of, you know, another bloodline out there, and you know, of using that. And I thought, you know, Daniel Harris was good in it, and it helped having Pleasance in there.
Yeah,
really hamming it up as well.
Well, I mean, it's a rare thing to have at least one character follow through six films, like it's not six films, five films.
Yeah, that's right.
But you know, there's not many characters in the history of cinema that go through that many films,
no
franchise.
Although
same actor.
Alice in Resident Evil will break that come.
Oh, can you believe that?
When
there's
the
that
final
many
installment.
Evil? How is that still a thing?
It's the final one now, isn't it?
Okay.
So we can put it to rest.
The same thing with Underworld as well.
I know. Kate Beckinsale. Is she coming back for that one? I think she is, isn't she?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Is her husband still directing?
Les Wiseman, is it?
Actually, are they even still together?
I don't even know.
If you can write listeners.
Let us know. I've lost the care factor on that one.
I need to know. I need to keep up with the Wisemans.
We don't want the Wisemans. Okay, so look, I think that concludes our special podcast recording of Halloween 4, 5 and 6. Keep an ear out for our further podcast as we continue more of our Halloween franchise discussions. Until then, we are Ben Skinner.
Goodbye.
And John. That was blunt.
And now I will be HAL 9000.
Yeah, goodbye. Okay, one more time. Until then, we are Ben Skinner.
Goodbye.
Oh no, it's all gone wrong. Until then, we are Ben Skinner.
See ya.
And your humble host, Paul Farrell. Goodbye.
I think that was the one.
That's the winner.
You're listening to the Surgeons of Horror podcast, the Halloween franchise, the Jamie Lloyd movies. Music supplied by Peter Nezick. For more discussions or podcasts, head over to surgeonsofhorror.com or head over to our Facebook and Twitter sites for the latest news and updates.